Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Rowing Chat. I'm Rebecca Caro, and this is the lead podcast on the Rowing Chat podcast network. You can find all of our shows on our website, rowing.chat/episodes. Now, today, I'm joined by Mark Davies, who's chair of British Rowing. But first, a message from our sponsors. This show wouldn't be possible without financial support from our sponsors, and we really appreciate listeners who are able to go and look at their products and services and sometimes buy them. William Marnie is our latest sponsor. Finding good quality clothing when you're an athlete can be a challenge, particularly for men. Dress shirts are not designed for rowers whose arms and backs are more muscled than the average desk jockey. So introducing William Marnie, the shirt maker for athletes. Their range of shirts is designed from the start for tall and fit men. Each shirt has detailing and style, fit and fabrics that will change the way you experience clothes, says the founder, Matt Marnie. You may have seen the team at the head of the Charles last autumn. They knew they'd come to the right place when they saw the range of athletic bodies walking down the towpath in front of their booth. And so for the man in your life, introduce them to William Marnie shirts or buy a couple. As one customer said, it really is a perfect dress shirt for someone that's tall. Get started with an exclusive 10% discount coupon, which is rowingchat10, so that's 10. Follow the link from the show notes or go to our sponsors page at rowing.chat/sponsors. And their address is William Marnie, and Marnie is spelled like Ma Honey, M-A Honey. And there's a link on the show page. Our second advert is for ourselves. We are doing an audience survey. So you're going to hear us saying this for a couple of months. We'd very much like to know more about you, our listeners, and we'd like you to participate if you can. It'll help us learn more about you, no matter how long you've been a listener, if this is the first episode or you've been with us since 2013 when we started. Can you take a few minutes and visit our website, rowing.chat? And the listener survey link is at the bottom of the homepage. It's actually /listener-survey. And you can take the survey totally anonymously, but we would be extremely grateful if you could help us out with that information. Now, welcome to my guest, Mark Davies, Chair of British Rowing. Mark, hello. How lovely that you're here.
Hi, Rebecca. Thanks for asking me.
Now, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background in the sport of rowing.
Well, I learned to row at Cambridge about 25, getting on for 30 years ago now. I began as a novice in, well, in fact, it was 30 years ago because I started in October 1990. And about 18 months after that, I found myself sitting on the start of a boat race course, which was not something I was expecting at the time, but I did my novice year, Fairburns, Lent bumps, May bumps, and then somebody said to me, why don't you try off the university? And I did. I got a couple of very, very lucky breaks, and before I knew it, I was sitting in the seat for Goldie in the 1992 race. I then spent another couple of years in the squad. I did 95 as well. Unfortunately, my incumbent year, 93, I found myself abroad as a modern linguist, and so I wasn't eligible. But then I left the sport. Well, I say I left it. I stopped competing, but I actually stayed a member of British Rowing. And I went to live in Australia, and I used to scull a lot out of Mossman Rowing Club, sculling Middle Harbour, one of the beautiful places in the world to go sculling. And then back in the UK, I hadn't had any involvement in rowing for quite some time when somebody suggested to me that I ought to apply for this role when it came up. So I did, and here I am.
Well, that's amazing. And I'm hearing that it's your 2-year anniversary next month.
Yes, April 2018 is when I took the role. I must say it was one I never expected that I would get. But I had a phone call from somebody in February 2018 who said to me, have you seen that British Rowing are looking for a new chair? And I said, I have. And he said, are you going to apply? And I said, no, why would I do that? And he said, well, why wouldn't you do that? And I said, well, because they've got so many people that they're going to want to have. They've got so many people who have won gold medals, so many people who are high profile, who are immediately recognizable, who they will want to put in the seat. And they would never look at somebody with my profile. And he replied, I think you're completely wrong. I think what they absolutely need is somebody with your profile. The question is, do you want to do it? And I said, well, I'd love to do it. It'd be a brilliant thing to do. And he said, well, my advice would be to apply. So I applied, and 6 weeks later, they told me that they wanted me to join. So I joined.
And what is your profile that you particularly bring?
Well, I've got a very mixed background, hopefully mixed in a positive way. I started my career in the city and spent four and a half years doing that, and then joined the BBC for 5 years. But in between straddling those two jobs, I also helped a couple of mates set up a business, which we grew from the 8 of us that started to 3,500 employees and a tiny little business to what's now a FTSE 100 company. So I think it was the fact that I've been part of a growth business. I have been an entrepreneur. I've been involved in lots of small businesses since and watched them grow and taken some part in helping them grow. And I think it was that bit in particular that he said, well, that's something they're going to be looking for.
So no background in traditional sports management in the board.
I was a trustee of Sports Aid, so I've got some involvement in sport through that. I grew up in sport. My father is a broadcaster with BBC and has been involved in sports commentary for the whole of his career. He covered every football World Cup from 1966 until 2002 and every Olympic Games from 1968 until London 2012. So he's not the most decorated, but in terms of what he has done more than any other broadcaster in the world of sport, I think probably worldwide. So I've grown up with sport, but I've never been involved in its actual management.
He's also mentioned in Redgrave's biography as playing golf with him and Matt. Yes.
I never knew that. There we go.
Well, there's definitely a golf anecdote, which I get the distinct impression the two of them are absolutely useless at golf. And basically, Jürgen said, get away from the river.
I didn't know that. And Dad's history of golf is not good. So if he ever got involved going anywhere near a golf course with anybody, I know Matt hits a decent ball. So that's totally news to me. But there we go. I shall have to look it up.
There you see, when you're a rowing geek, you end up picking up bits of trivia and then assuming that they're true.
Yeah, there you go.
Someone will immediately tweet us both and go, that Rebecca, her memory's really faulty.
Well, it's definitely, I'd be surprised to discover it was him, but maybe Steve has put it down as him, but you never know.
I think it was a conversation that led to other things, was my recollection of how the story evolved, and he was a critical part of it. Now, obviously, you came in following a very well-known chair, Amory Phelps, and at a time when sport is changing fast and the funding and management model for sport is changing fast, give us a little bit of context about what is happening in the broader picture of how all sports that are participatory and non-professional in the main are run in the UK at the moment.
Well, they all have the same fundamental problem, which is funding. So I came to rowing, I did have one brief experience with sport management in that I was chair of Archery GB when rowing asked me if I would take the chair here, but I hadn't done that for very long. But it's interesting that the challenges that archery have are exactly the same as the challenges that rowing have, and indeed across the board of sport. As you suggest, they have common issues. And the basic issue is that it costs more to run sports today than they get in income from their memberships. And that's probably been the case for a very long time, but the slack has always been taken up in the past by a combination of government money and sponsorship money. And the reality is today that sponsorship money is much, much harder to come by than it ever was before, mainly because it is easier as a marketing director to track what you do online than it is by doing brand awareness type marketing by putting your name on shirts and boats and things. And government money is only going in one direction, and that's not the direction that we want it to be going in. So we are all, as sports, facing a little bit of a funding crisis because the income is going down at the same time as the costs of running sport are going up. And that's because governance requirements are much greater than they used to be. Safeguarding requirements are greater than they used to be. And as a result, we are in a bit of a funding squeeze. And unless we address that fairly rapidly, we're all going to find, as sports, that we're in a real pickle. And rowing is no different in that regard.
So that was the situation when you applied for the job. Mm-hmm. And I suspect many of the listeners will, if you're in the UK and on the British Rowing mailing list, have had this email that came out last week that talked about Shape Rowing's future and an invitation. Leaving that aside for now, talk to us a little bit about your personal vision and what you believe is possible, because I'm going to assume you're in this job for the long run. You're not a fixed term chairman that we know will walk out.
No, I can do two terms as things currently stand under the Sports Code of Governance. I can do 2 4-year terms, and I'm coming up, as you say, to my second year anniversary. So I've got another 6 years to get things right.
So what is your vision for the future of rowing in Great Britain?
Well, the very first thing I'd like to do is to make the financial position stable so that we can create a virtuous circle in order to be able to invest in the sport effectively and do a whole host of things, which I think lots of people would want us to do. You have to bear in mind that as a sports governing body, as a national governing body of any sport, you've got two pretty distinct audiences. You've got the government that want to see you doing things with the sport that are about expanding it and going into new communities and doing new things with new people. And then you've got the current members who actually don't really care about that as much, at least, because they're worried about the here and now. They're interested in how easy it is to compete, whether they can get decent coaching, whether the registration systems for competitions work, whether people answer the phone when they phone you with a query. They want things addressed that are very much of the moment. So trying to do two different things as a national governing body, and ultimately you can't do either unless you are financially viable. So the very first thing that I want to do is to address the finances and make sure that we are not hemorrhaging money as we have been now for some little time. We had a reserve position of over £9 million after London 2012. And we now have reserves of only just over £3 million. We've actually dipped just under our reserve policy minimum. So we are no longer in a position where we can run this structural deficit that we have been running for years. And the very first thing on the agenda, therefore, is to balance the budget. I think we can do it. And I think that we can grow our membership fairly substantially by changing the way that people look at membership and look at the national governing body. And if I'm right, then we can give ourselves some unrestricted income, which we can use to make a substantial difference to those who are doing the sport today in terms of their everyday, what's happening, whether they can do it recreationally, whether they can access competitions and anything else they want to do easily and quickly, rather than a very sort of analog version that we have at the moment in a digital world.
So that's the kicking off position. What does easy, unfettered access, what do you think that will mean in practical terms? Are we talking about self-management via a web portal, everyone being able to put their own race entries in? What's happening?
Yeah, I mean, in an ideal world, I think, you know, we take control of our own lives in every other aspect of things that we interact with on a consumer basis today. And yet in rowing, we have this very analog system. We have a website which feels antediluvian. I know it's not actually, but it feels it. This stuff moves very quickly. We're still sending out membership cards to people and asking them to do things that we shouldn't require them to do in this day and age. They should have full control over what they do themselves. And in an ideal world, we'd be producing that. But right now, we can't even begin to think about it because we don't have the resource to do it, either the people or the money in order to invest in it effectively.
So where's the membership growth coming from?
Well, there are obviously two ways that you can grow your membership. Let's just put some context on it. We have 33,000 people who are members at the moment, which is the highest membership that we have ever had. But there are two types of member, two target audiences that we could have. One of them is active rowers. And obviously, if you increased your active rowers substantially, then you have an infrastructure problem that comes with that, because you need, if you have more people rowing, you need more boats and you need more coaching courses and you need more competitions and you need more of everything. You need more clubs, ultimately. In fact, one person said to me, the river is full where I am, which I think is a bit of an exaggeration, but anyway, it has been said to me. But going for people who are actually going to get out on the water is not necessarily, well, in my view, not the right audience to be going for. We've then got an audience of people who think of rowing as being their sport, but who think of membership of British Rowing as being something that they only need if they are an active participant in the sport. And therefore, they drop their membership the moment that they stop competing and they no longer need a race license or insurance. And we need to change that mindset, because those people could make a substantial difference to the sport domestically, which means not just in what we can do in terms of growth and getting out to communities and just taking rowing and the love of rowing into areas and making a difference to people's lives in a way that people who are in rowing already know it does to them and to people that they're with. Not only that, but also on the Olympic and in the international scene, where the world, again, is changing very, very rapidly. I was in Vienna last weekend with the European presidents, and the president of FISA came to talk to us about where we're at with the Olympics. I'm sure we'll get onto it in a moment. But something that he said struck me, which was, our involvement in the Olympics today is no longer dependent on how many people are out there on the water. It's dependent on what the size of our family is and how interested people are in our sport. So actually, by growing the rowing community and showing that they are affiliated to rowing as a sport and playing a part in rowing, even if just as a supporter, we will end up making a big difference to our prospects internationally as well as domestically. So the objective from our perspective is to get out there to the literally hundreds of thousands of people that are in some way connected with rowing around the country, and to say to them, look, come and be part of the sport. It doesn't require you to do a great deal, but become a friend of British Rowing, be a £30 a year member. For that, we will keep you informed as to what's going on, and you will see that the impact that you have collectively makes a really big positive change to the sport. And just to put some numbers on how many people might do that, there are 10,000 people a year that throw in their membership of British Rowing because they're no longer racing and no longer need insurance. 10,000 people a year, a third of our membership every year turns away. So that's been happening for just years and years. So if we were to capture some of them, and we were to capture some of the friends and family who have seen people in their family involved in the sport and have seen what a difference it can make, and go along to regattas and watch them compete and could be supporting the sport and learning more about it and knowing that they're making a difference. And then that's before you've even started to talk about the number of people that get on an ergo at some point every month. 700,000 people in the UK use an ergo at some point every month in some way. So if you could capture just a very small percentage of all these groups of people, you would be able to make a massive difference. I mean, I've just named you getting on for 1 million people there. If we were to capture 20, 30, 40,000 of those people, we would be doubling our membership. I believe we can get to 100,000 members using Friends of British Rowing as a vehicle. And if we were to do that, it would bring us £2 million a year of unrestricted income. And if we had £2 million of unrestricted income, which is very, very different from the money that we get from government, we would be able to do some really interesting and exciting things, which I think all our current participants would really appreciate.
So I can see a couple of reasonably straightforward ways to do that. You could ask the Henley Stewards, who probably, and Leander Club, who probably have the biggest mailing list of any rowing organisation in the world, just to add a compulsory £30 levy to their annual regatta fees. I could also see a charitable style funding model like the micro funding charity Kiva, mm-hmm. where I put my £30 down knowing it's going to support this specific initiative in this town or this school. And it's very much more a charitable giving relationship, but laser focused into something that's so explicit that I can actually see photos of the actual kids and, you know, or adults or whatever it is, the thing that I'm supporting. So is British Rowing a charity?
We're not, but we've set up a charitable arm, partly because we want to do exactly that. Although the Friends of Initiative is not exactly the same as the charitable arm. So we launched the British Rowing Charitable Foundation in November last year. And that is very much focused towards broadening the reach of the sport in the way that is currently already happening with some of the fantastic initiatives that take place around the country, from Warrington Youth Rowing, London Youth Rowing, Fulham Reach Boat Club and others. But there aren't enough of them. And the opportunity to get out to schools and to use our Go Row Indoor programme, for example, to get out to more schools is something that we can absolutely support on a charitable basis, which is why we've set up a British Rowing Charitable Foundation. But the Charitable Foundation is about getting larger donations in than the Friends of Initiative, which is just a very small involvement from people who are alumni of the sport. And just getting that group to recognise what the purpose of British Rowing is, because they look at us and they think of us as a national governing body, and therefore they think that we're a tax man and a regulator, and they don't have any love for us as a result. And what we'd like them to start thinking about us as is a trustee of the sport, who are there to hand the sport on to the next generation in a better condition than we inherited it. That's what we're trying to do ultimately as British Rowing as an organisation, and certainly as the board of British Rowing. But in order to do it, we obviously need to be able to resource initiatives. And those initiatives are not necessarily charitable. So we've got two arms. We have got the Charitable Foundation for those who are prepared to support some of the larger projects. But some of the smaller amounts of money could themselves make a significant difference. And that's the Friends of British Rowing Initiative, which is a separate, albeit related, idea.
So could I get the magazine?
You could get the magazine, although we will be phasing out the magazine over the course of the coming months and moving on to more digital communications. We can be much more agile with digital communications. And actually, our research has shown that although people like to pick up the magazine, they tend to flick through it very quickly, and it's not a very good means of communicating. But you will get, through Friends of British Rowing, you will get access to our comms. So you will feel more closely involved with the sport than if you were not a friend of British Rowing. Yes.
Fantastic. So let's talk then, are these plans now in some level of detail and ready to be rolled out, Mark?
Yes, we have actually launched our Friends of British Rowing website. So we are in a position, I've been talking about this for quite a long time, and I stopped talking about it because people would say to me, I totally buy into that. I'm absolutely willing to do it. Where do I sign up? And the answer was always, we haven't actually got an easy and effective way for you to do it, but we now have. So just with a few clicks, we've got a much more user-friendly experience to sign up as a friend. And you can do that and sign a direct debit form and say that you're going to support us at £30 a year. And I'm saying to people, look, give us a couple of years. The most you're going to lose is 60 quid. You probably wouldn't notice it. It's the cost of a decent meal out in London. And give us a go and see what we do with it. And then when you see that we do good things with it, you want to stay part of the family because you'll feel good about the fact that you are contributing to the sport flourishing in this country.
And what's the address of that website?
Well, it's on the British Rowing website. I should know the bit after the slash. But if you go for Friends of British Rowing on the BritishRowing.org website, you will find it.
Fantastic. Talk a little bit about this mass meetup in Birmingham on Sunday, the 19th of April.
Mm.
That's about strategic planning called Shape Rowing's Future.
Yeah.
What's going to happen on that day? Are you going to be there?
I am definitely going to be there. In fact, I am going to start things by talking to people. Oh, sorry. I've got a frog in my throat. And of course, I've come along without anything to drink. I'm going to be talking to people about what our plans are, what we're trying to achieve, and how we're going about achieving it. And then once I've put up a straw man, we're going to ask people for their views as to whether it'll work or not. Sorry, Becca.
I'd certainly like the idea of grassroots listening and potential engagement. And there are certainly very, very smart people who try things locally. I mean, my personal experience of rowing has always been grassroots in clubs, trying to do things with the resources they have available, with the people and the facilities that they have available. Now, this I see as a one-off, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. How does it fit into the regional committee reporting structure, which is the governance of British Rowing at the moment?
Well, you say it's a one-off. It's actually part of an ongoing program to try and make sure that our whole communication with the sport is different. I know that we'd have done road shows in the past. Of course we have. We go out and we talk to people, but we're trying to talk to people in a different way from the way that we have traditionally. And one of the things that I say all the time to Andy and the team is, you know, we just need to speak to people in a less defensive, more human way. And I think we've done a lot of that over recent months. And the meeting in April is just part of a changing communications program. One of the answers to the second part of your question as to how that fits into the regional structure is that we need people to understand exactly how things work at the moment. And I think that it's very easy currently for people to turn around whenever there's a problem and say, oh, that's bloody British Rowing. And very often I get people saying to me, you know, why has this happened or why has that happened? And the answer is, I don't actually know. I didn't know anything about it until you phoned me up and told me. And they will say, oh, well, it's a British Rowing decision. And I'll say, well, okay, but it's not a decision that's been taken by the executive. It's not something that comes to the board. I didn't know anything about it. It's happened in this or that committee. And the lines of accountability and therefore the lines of responsibility are not always obvious. So one of the things that I'd like to talk to people about on the 19th of April is if people buy into the vision and how we're going to address our financial position and what we're going to do once we've done that, what does that mean about the structure and decision making in the sport? I don't want to have a situation like we had, for example, last year, when we moved national championships from October to July or to June. And a lot of people came and rattled my cage about it and weren't happy for various reasons. And when I explained to them that actually it wasn't our decision to make at the board of British Rowing, they were quite surprised. And I said, look, you know, there is interaction here. It came to the board to check the governance of the decision making. But it's not the board that decides when we should put what where. So that's just one very small example of where people's perhaps lack of understanding of the process of governance and the way decisions are made leads them to think something which, should we say, is not terribly charitable towards the national governing body. And the reason that that is important is that unless they feel that the national governing body is an effective organization acting in the interests of the sport, then they won't support it. So actually, going back to my whole Friends of British Rowing, why would somebody give us £30 a year? Well, the very first thing they need to do in order to give us £30 a year is to be confident that we're going to do something useful with it. And if they think that it's going to be effectively spent and they're contributing to something positive, then there's every reason why they're going to come and support it. If they think they're giving it to a bunch of useless people who get everything wrong, then why would they? So what we want to do is to talk to people about where we're going, why we're going there, what it means, how they can contribute, how we're trying to help, and how, as a group, all understanding that, we can make a really positive difference.
And adding to that and your previous remarks about digital and speaking to people in a more human way, things like minutes of regional meetings should be available to anyone who is a member in that region. Because if you can't find out what was talked about and what was recorded, how the hell can you see how it affects you personally? And I know that rowing clubs themselves are not necessarily, they're not paid to be communication specialists, but my experience of open communication is that if you put something out in the public eye, you can't complain if people don't read it. It was there.
Mm. Look, I think it's a view that I share, but it's not mine to mandate. So I do what I can actually affect, and I can affect whether we at British Rowing put out our minutes, and we do now, and I can impact the way that we communicate with people. Because I can talk to the team about doing that. I can't tell a region how it should behave or act. I can't tell a club what it should be doing. What I can do is explain to it why, either the region or the club, why a particular methodology might help not just it, but the sport as a whole. And that's ultimately what I'm trying to do.
Brilliant. And I think that that's an amazingly strong position and very enlightened for an organisation that's neither private nor public sector, but is kind of here for the common good, but not run by volunteers. You are now a professionally run entity with, you know, salaried staff. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to hearing more. So if I become a friend of British Rowing, do I get to see the board minutes?
Actually, the board minutes are public. They're on our website. So you don't need to be a friend of British Rowing to see the minutes. You can just go on the website and you can find them. If you become a friend of British Rowing, at the moment you will get the comms that we send out to our members. But hopefully, as the months progress and we get ourselves into a stronger financial position, you will get more things that develop. But ultimately, when people say to me, you know, what do we get as a friend of British Rowing? Well, you get the sport and you get the knowledge that you are supporting the sport so that the next generation will have the same benefits from it that you did. Or more, in fact, hopefully.
Back in the day, my perception as an outside member of British Rowing was that you were extremely good at being very early on applying for grants from everyone from Sport England downwards, particularly when they were trying. My first experience with that was Rosie Magloughlin leading the codification of this, the qualifications for coaching into level 2, 3 and aligning what had previously been called the bronze, silver and gold coaching awards with a national standard. And that was a methodology that you as an organization were extremely successful pursuing for many years. Now I see you at the leading edge of something which is new, but is also mirrored in other sporting codes, which is owning events which make money as a contribution to your financial overall, you know, well-being. Tell us a little bit about the events that are now owned by British Rowing.
Well, actually, not as many as you might think. I mean, we obviously have the British Rowing Indoor Championships. At the moment, we don't have a national championships. but really, for me, it's not about the ownership of the events, because the events themselves don't necessarily make a load of money. And I don't see us necessarily as an event organizer, although there are some events that we can organize and do organize very well. But some of the, you know, biggest, most high profile events in rowing, the obvious two being Henley Royal Regatta and the boat race. But so many of the other events that you can see on the calendar are nothing to do with us at all. They might come under our rules and regulations, but they aren't run by us. They're run by volunteers very successfully as well. And I think the last thing in the world that any of those groups would want to do would be for us to come along and say, oh, no, no, we can run this better. I see us as a facilitator of other people doing what they want to do within the sport. And I'm a very big believer in the concept of subsidiarity, whereby decisions are taken at the lowest possible level that they can be taken, down to the grassroots of the sport, and only come up to the national governing body in the event that they can't be solved lower down. So I don't want British Rowing to be an organisation that comes in heavy-handed and tells everybody how they should be doing stuff, because in many cases, there are people doing things extremely successfully who have been doing so for very many years. What I want us to be doing is facilitating those people's lives and to be going out to other groups of people and saying, look, this has been so well done over there by those people. Let's help you do the same thing over here, because that way we can get out to ever larger audiences and get ever more people involved.
And of course, that involvement you've already mentioned, ergos, I'm guessing that coastal rowing and other forms of sea-based rowing activity are where you would hope your bailiwick extends to.
Yes. Ergos obviously are something which are used by a lot of people who don't think of themselves as being rowers. You know, we talk about them as being indoor rowers. I recently had a very angry note from somebody because British Rowing put out a note that was clearly targeted at indoor rowers that said, come and try on water rowing. And somebody sent me a very angry note saying, well, you know, what is rowing if it's not on water rowing? And I explained to him that, look, if, you know, if you, all your experience of rowing has been to use an ergo and you think of that as rowing, and we come along and say to you, do you want to have a go at rowing? Your response is, oh, I do that already. So we have to distinguish, and we can't assume just because our obvious audience have been in the sport of sliding seat, what you and I would call rowing, for many, many years, that that's how everybody else sees it. And there are all sorts of different forms of rowing around the country, some of which involve water, others of which don't, some of which involve sliding seats, others of which don't. Mm-hmm. And you know, we need to be, sufficiently not arrogant to say that they all have a place. And I don't think that we should be dictating to anybody what their view of the world should be. Actually, one of the questions that we have when we look at, you know, these issues of governance is precisely that the core of people that are most vocal about things within rowing tend to look, and I totally understand why they do it, I think we all do it to a certain extent, but they tend to look at the world through their own eyes and never through the eyes of anybody else who's involved in a different part of the sport. So we have, as I mentioned, 33,000 members. And those 33,000 members, they have very, very different attitudes. You're never going to get 33,000 people who have a, you know, a fixed view. So I've thrown a couple of ideas out there, which I know resonate with some of our 33,000 members, but the vocal ones who, you know, it doesn't necessarily resonate with will turn around and say, well, that's a ridiculous idea. You know, why on earth are we doing that? And the answer is, well, that one doesn't work for you, but there'll be another idea that does work for you, and that won't work for a different set of people. And ultimately, that's the challenge of the national governing body. You can't be all things to all people, but you must be something to all people at some point in their existence, because otherwise they think, well, these people are not for me. And in going out and making sure we address different parts of the community at different times with different things that they might want, we will always upset somebody who thinks that at that moment we should be turning our attention to them. And that's the challenge. That's why there is always a wall of noise that says that we get everything wrong. I say to the team, let's get the simple things that everyone wants right, and then we'll be able to address the various different communities in the various different ways that they want to be addressed, without having this wall of negativity that sometimes knocks us off course.
It does, and thank you for, you know, making it clear that you're not infallible, that, you know, some things will be tried and will be rejected in favour of improved tools or programmes. And so let's encourage people to get on their cars and buses and trains and come to Birmingham. It's April the 19th, Sunday, and the details are all on the website. It came out in a newsletter on the 21st of February called Your Chance to Shape Rowing's Future. So if you're on that newsletter list, you'll be able to find that.
Yeah, and in fact, even before that, Rebecca, you know, a good example of what I've just said to you is the British Rowing Award that we've got taking place on the 21st of March.
Which you do own. There we go, is another one.
So the British Rowing Awards. So one of the first things that was ever said to me when I took on the role of chair was that we needed to find ways to create clearer links from the grassroots all the way to the top of the sport. And you know, there's an awful lot, and we could talk about this for just that one topic for an hour. But one of the things that I thought we should be doing, last year I went to the Volunteer of the Year Awards lunch that we held every year. It's held at the River and Rowing Museum. And it was a very nice event, but ultimately there were 70 people there. Every single person in the room was very closely connected with the people who had won the various awards. And as a celebration of what they had done, and as a celebration of the sport, I thought we could do a lot more with it. So I said to the guys, look, there's this desire to link the grassroots all the way to the top. We should be having a celebration of the sport annually. Let's do a British Rowing Awards that has different awards for different categories, and let's ask the people right at the top of the sport if they'll engage and come down, and then let's invite the clubs to come and get involved. So we've booked the 21st of March, which is the evening of the Head of the River race. Now we've got Jürgen Grobler coming, we've got Andy Triggs Hodge coming, we've got James Cracknell coming, Kath Bishop coming, Imogen Grant coming. All these people are coming to hand out awards on the night. And what do you think the response that I had from various people? Some people said to me, oh, well, it's not the British Rowing Awards, it's the English Rowing Awards, because if you're not a club in England, you can't. So I did explain to them that this is the British Rowing Awards, not the British Rowing Awards. We got past that. And then people said, oh, you know, you've got it on the night of the Head of the River race, which is the night before the Vet's Head. Obviously, we were aware of that. But when we were picking a date, I thought, well, if we don't do it on a day that everybody, a lot of clubs in around the country have a reason to be in London, then people are going to say, oh, you're very London-centric and we've got to come down specially, so we don't want to come down specially. So I thought, well, let's do it on a day that a lot of people will have come down already. And then people said, well, you know, now we've got to stay overnight. And anyway, various people have said to me, this is never going to work. And you know what? They might be right. It might not work. But we've got 30,000 plus members. We need 200 to 300 people in the room. So we need 1% of our membership to decide that it is going to work and to come and to turn out on the day, on the evening, and to enjoy a good night subsidized by British Rowing, and to celebrate the sport and celebrate the people in the sport who have made a difference. We've got a coach of the year, volunteer of the year, rising star of the year, club of the year, school crew of the year, junior crew of the year, all these different categories. And we're just going to go out and celebrate the sport. Now, ultimately, if we don't fill it and it doesn't work, then I shall hold my hands up and I shall say to all those who said to me, it's never going to work, you were right, it didn't work. But my view is that I'm in a membership of 30,000 people, we're going to get 200 to 300 of them to decide that they want to come and celebrate. It might not be the same 200 to 300 people who like a different idea, but it will be a set of people who say, this is something positive that I can engage in. And if we can do things that attract different groups of 200 to 300 every time we do them, then I think we are doing the right thing. In contrast, if we attract the same 200 to 300 people for everything we do, then we're doing the wrong thing.
Is there any opportunity for the public to vote on the award?
The public had the chance to nominate. So the nominations were open to anybody. And then for the actual judging of those nominations, we drew up shortlists within British Rowing. And then I got a panel for each of the awards of four people, two men and two women from across the country. So we've gone from the chair of Windermere Rowing Club to the president of Shoreham Boat Club on the South Coast. We've gone from the captain of Castle Door Rowing Club in Cornwall to the captain of Blue Star up in Newcastle. You know, we have literally covered the length and breadth of the country to try and get people involved in making the decisions. And we opened the nominations, as I say, to all comers. So it really is a cross the country event, and I think it's going to be a very good night. And as I say, we've got some of the biggest names in rowing coming along. Jürgen Gröbler, who next weekend is going to be presiding over the final Olympic trials, is a week later turning up in order to hand out an award at a club rowing event. And I think that is absolutely fantastic, and I hope people come and take part.
I've certainly always admired British Rowing's Olympian alumni and how they make themselves so very available for anything from fundraising to motivating young people.
Yeah, you know, one of the reasons that we're going down this Friends of British Rowing route is because I firmly believe it's something that is inherent in the sport. I mentioned that archery had the same issues as we do, and like us, there are lots of people who shoot arrows who are not members of Archery GB. There are 15,000 people in this country who are members of a rowing club who are not members of British Rowing. So that's the lowest hanging fruit out there, right? Those people are actually involved in rowing today but not members of British Rowing. I think that we as a sport will respond to that whole let's pull together in a way that would never happen in another sport. I would never be running this strategy as chairman of Archery GB. It just doesn't work. It's not part of the sport's makeup, but it is absolutely part of rowing's makeup. You know, we are a sport that is all about pulling together. And unless we move as a unit, we don't go anywhere. It's as simple as that. So I think that actually telling people about what it is we're trying to do and what difference they can make. And when they're looking at the people alongside them and seeing that they're pulling as hard as they can, they're going to say, well, I've got to pull as hard as I can as well, because that's what the sport is about. So to go back to your point, Rebecca, about, you know, how are we going? You said, you know, are we a charity? Are we this? Are we that? But I'm going to people that I was in a crew with 20, 25 years ago, and I'm saying, look, you know, you still think of rowing as your sport. You always look to see what's happening. You turn up to Henley, you turn up to other regattas. You think of rowing as your sport. When people say to you, what's your sport? You say rowing. Will you come and be a friend? And then I'm saying to each of them, can you now go back to a crew of yours that you were in that I wasn't in and get the other eight people that were in that boat? And if we can just roll that out across the sport of people who have previously been in crews with other people and cascade it down, we don't need many people each to go out and iterate that a few times before we're in very, very large numbers of people supporting the sport. And that's why I believe it can work as well as I think it will, because it is part and parcel of the DNA of the sport that we're in.
So a local example from here in New Zealand, the masters level of the sport, so the over 27s, support the national junior program. So we compete in North Island and South Island and national masters regattas. And the organizations that run the North Island one make a profit. And that profit goes into grants to pay for the expenses of the young people who are selected to row for New Zealand in regattas in Europe. And bear in mind, it's well over £1,000 just for an airfare to get your athlete to the regatta that they've, you know, been selected to row in. And actually, that's incredibly effective. And the growth in masters rowing is now actively connected with and supporting the top levels of the up and coming youth end of the sport.
I think that's fantastic. And you know, similar success has been had here by the Henley Stewards Charitable Trust, who put a lot of money back into the sport. But it's taken them 30 years to build up the endowment that's required to do that. And what we're looking to do is to accelerate very quickly by going out to our alumni very quickly over a period of, you know, just a matter of months, and saying to them, come on, this is what we want to get done. This is how we're going to do it. The risk to you is minimal. Get involved, see what a difference it makes. And if it doesn't work, then fine, you can always roll away. But my hope is that they're going to sign up, they're going to see what a difference it makes. And as a result, they will just be doing it year on year. And every year that passes, we'll be adding another 10,000 people who would otherwise drop away from the sport to that group of friends.
We're getting some comments from listeners live. Tracy Moore, who says, I used to work with Mark at the BBC.
Hello, Tracy Moore.
She then says, he won't remember me.
Oh, of course I remember you.
And
Tracy, when I first started at the BBC, I remember we used to sit on desks at News 24, and she seemed to have been there forever in the way that people always seem like they've been there forever. If they've been sitting at a desk for more than 5 minutes before you arrive and you assume that they've just been there forever. And I remember sitting down next to Tracy Moore, and she seemed to know things just so perfectly. I thought, oh, crikey, I better learn from this person. And before I knew it, she'd left the BBC, which was very sad, really. But anyway, there we go. Hello, Tracy.
And Veronique Givens says, I'll watch more later. I have to go to work. Thank you. So she's a woman who I know who was a member of British Rowing in the past. So
hopefully she'll be a member, a friend of British Rowing in the future.
Exactly. And Steve Dance says, any comment on the point system discouraging club level rowing?
I don't think it does, is the answer to that. Although we are forever keeping the point system under review. And the point system is a very interesting case in point, in that there has been quite a lot of noise around the point system from people on Twitter. At the same time as we've had quite a lot of positive feedback on the point system directly. So I said when I first came along, I inherited the point system, obviously, and I said, look, I have no skin in this game whatsoever. I'm very happy to reconsider it and have it looked at in some depth, and we therefore have it under review. I said at the start of, is it this season? Where are we now? We're now March, so it would have been pretty well a year ago that we were going to wait another year before we made any final assessments on it. And so we're waiting for the data to come in. We'll have a look at that data. We've been working with SAS, who are one of our sponsors and who are experts in analytics, to establish whether it's doing the job that it was meant to do or not. And I've also got some guys from Cambridge University involved in helping us do that. And you know, I'm not a mathematician. I have mathematicians who tell me it works. I have other mathematicians who tell me that it doesn't work. We'll wait for another load of data to come in and then we'll make a decision. But I don't agree that it is stopping clubs from getting involved, although I have been told that by people in the past. I've also been told the contrary. So it's ongoing, being reviewed, is the answer to that one.
So the answer's at the end of this season, so sometime August, September.
Exactly. We will look at the data that comes through.
Let's talk about the future. It's Olympic year. How's the British team doing in qualifying for the Olympics?
Look, we've qualified. In terms of qualification, we've done very well. We're coming towards final trials, which, as I say, are next weekend. And understandably, you know, things are getting quite tense as a result. I was down in Caversham a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to be down again this week to see how everybody's going. And I'm hoping to be at the finals of final trials on Sunday the 15th. Yeah, the guys and girls have been on training camps recently. I've heard good things about how they've gone, but understandably, it's a tense period for everybody involved. I'm keeping my fingers crossed for them, and I'm really not sticking my oar in, as it were, because I don't think it's for me to do. You know, they know what they've got to do. The coaches know what they've got to do, and I'm hoping that everything goes well between now and the summer.
Are there any crews going to Lucerne to try and qualify that didn't make it at the last Worlds?
I don't really want to talk about who's doing what, because I don't think any decisions are set in stone yet until we get to the other side of final trials. I don't think that it's for me to preempt any of the thoughts, not actually, to be honest, that I know particularly, because I haven't felt that it's my job to stick my oar in at this point. The guys in Caversham are doing what the guys in Caversham do. And although it's not the fortress that it used to be, I don't think that my opinion on matters at this stage of the game is something that would be particularly welcome. So I keep my ear to the ground, but I'm afraid I'm not about to start using my mouth as well as my ears in this particular instance.
So an announcement will be made if people want to find out, because I know we've got overseas people watching us. Where do they go to find the public announcements?
Well, we'll be sticking them out through our usual social media channels and on our website.
Right. Now, FISA is also making changes internationally to rowing. Obviously, some of its changes are imposed on it by the Global Olympic Association, but some of them are homespun and homegrown. What's FISA talking about in terms of broadening the appeal of rowing as a sport?
It's not so much broadening the appeal that FISA are focused on at the moment. It's the issue that lightweights are going to fall out of the Olympic program, and that the IOC is keen to reduce the number of athletes that are involved. So as we head towards Paris in 2024, the IOC wants to reduce the number of athletes involved in the game as a whole by about 350, I think the number is, at the same time as increasing the number of sports. So the result of that is that they want to reduce the number of people that we as a sport are allowed to take. And the IOC is grappling with that at the moment and will present a plan to us post Tokyo as to how it wants to address it. Almost certainly, I would think it's going to introduce some coastal rowing. There are ongoing debates at a FISA level asking for the input of the international federations about that. And we are actively involved in those discussions. I'm slightly loath to give too much of a view while we're having those conversations, because I know that the guys at FISA in their turn are feeling the pressure somewhat, trying to juggle an awful lot of different opinions. So I in a similar way. I don't really want to add to that pressure while talking to him in the background, but I think it's fair to say that there are some challenges that are imposed from the IOC down onto rowing. And as I mentioned right at the start of this podcast, the FISA president came and told the European presidents just last week in Vienna that the way that the IOC look at things today is not necessarily about how many people we get on the water, but what the size of our overall community is. So in a way that will seem extraordinary to a lot of people in our sport, the IOC is focused on things like how many followers there are on Facebook and how many posts and likes we get on Instagram. And it's just, that's just the way that sport is going. So we have to adapt to that, and we're doing our best to work with FISA on it.
Fantastic. And I follow you on Twitter. We occasionally tweet to each other. You've mentioned a idea of a passporting system as a personal concept you've come up with. Tell our listeners a little bit about what you think that is.
Well, it's one of a number of ideas, Rebecca, and actually it gets to the point I was making just a few minutes ago about the fact that not everything will work for everybody, and for many people, the passporting system is something that they don't need. But the idea came from my experience actually going to live in Australia. When I first arrived in Australia, I decided that I wanted to row, and I rocked up to Mossman Rowing Club. And I went up to Nick, the chief coach there at the time, who sadly died last year, actually, just before the Under-23 World Championships. But I went up to Nick and I said to him, any chance I can take out a sculling boat? And he said, well, you know, what's your rowing background? And I told him, and it was a rowing background that he could immediately relate to. And he said, yeah, sure, go for your life, take it out. So off I went. And I thought to myself, well, I wonder if I'd named a club that he didn't know anything about, or if I hadn't had an obvious way to be able to explain that I was any good or knew what I was doing. I wonder if he'd have been as amenable as he was. So it struck me that something that we could do that would make a British Rowing membership card useful for people would be to introduce a passporting system with other countries whereby you could turn up and you could effectively demonstrate to somebody who otherwise knew nothing about you that you were capable of taking out some of their equipment, whether it was a sculling boat or whether it was using an ergo or whatever it was that the club wanted to make available. And when I suggested it, a lot of people say, well, I do that anyway. And sure, you know, a lot of people do that anyway, and they go to on holiday to wherever it may be, and they have the chutzpah to rock up to a rowing club and to use the stuff that's there. But for a lot of people, they don't, and they might find themselves in a city that is not their hometown. It doesn't even need to be abroad necessarily. If I go on business, let's say, to Manchester for a few days from London, and I don't have use of my ergo that I have here at home, and I'm not a member of a gym in Manchester, and there isn't an ergo in the hotel gym, what do I do? Well, the answer is I go running, and I don't want to go running. I want to jump on an ergo. And if I had a passporting system that allowed me to say, look, here we go, within this is an ergo finder. I know where there's an ergo within half a mile of me. I can get there, and I can jump on it by virtue of being a member of British Rowing, and the person who owns the ergo has opted in. Then happy days, what's not to like? If you don't want to use that system, you don't have to use it. But if you do want to use it, then it's quite effective. Anyway, I mentioned this idea at a FISA meeting some time ago. And in particular, the Danish president said to me, I absolutely love that idea. We have members that would love to come and row in the UK. I'm sure you've got members that would love to come and row in Denmark. And then he said to me, do you know where one of the biggest Danish clubs, rowing clubs is? And I started to name the few Danish towns that I knew. And he said to me, no, it's in Greece.
Yeah, it is. The Danish rowing club in Athens. Yeah, absolutely. We have members.
There you go. You know, we have developed a club in Greece. He said, and if we could create a system where we had club membership that you could use all around the world, then why not? You know, clubs have this generally, not rowing clubs, but, you know, if you're a member of, I don't know,
golf.
Well, golf clubs do for sure. But even, you know, even clubs that offer accommodation, you can go to a club in New York, and if you've got a Leander membership, they have reciprocal membership in clubs in, you know, around the world. So really, it's just a reciprocal membership system. And I threw out the idea that said, you know, would people want this? And as I say, it was very interesting. If somebody threw out an idea that didn't work for me, I tend to say, well, you know, there's no point in me saying it here. It doesn't work for me, but the next person it might work for. So why don't I let that person contribute? But the people who felt that it was a bad idea wanted to tell me at great length that it was a bad idea. And I got a lot of private notes from people saying, I'd really like this. Can you introduce it as quickly as possible? So, you know, I've had conversations with various of my European counterparts. The Danes, as I say, are very keen to roll it out straight away. They've got the other Scandi countries together and said, you know, let's do this. Can we not create some reciprocal memberships? And we could do it, but ultimately I need British clubs to turn around and say, yeah, we'll offer some kind of availability for something. I should say that it doesn't require anybody to, you know, to give carte blanche to use of things. All they would need to do would just be a centralized website that we would run that would say, X rowing club, you know, ergos tick, sculling boats tick, eights very unlikely, you know, whatever it was that they wanted to make available, they could make available. And it would just mean that if you found yourself in a given country or a given city and you wanted to have an outing, you could find out the most likely way of having an outing. And I think it would be helpful for everybody. One of the things I'm very, very keen to do is to increase the opportunities for recreational rowing and not have our sport being such an all or nothing sport, where unless you can turn up six times a week with the crew that you're set with and train in this particular way, you can't take part. Because I think that that's one of the reasons that people drop out of membership in the way they do, because they have lifestyle changes. They move cities, they move away from the club they're a member of, they change their jobs, they leave university and they start to think about having a young family. They can't train to the extent they did before. And as a result, they give up rowing. And I think that's a great shame. I think it would be much better to have a system whereby they could get involved on a more recreational basis. Just this weekend, you know, the Women's Head of the River race was called off at fairly short notice, and I walked the length of the Tideway, and I saw umpteen women's eights out there, unsurprisingly, on the water, even though they couldn't race. And many of them were picking up, you know, little fixtures against other crews. You see all sorts of people doing just little bursts together. And I'm very keen. One of the other ideas that I've tweeted about and that I've blogged about is a ladder system of racing, which allows people to throw down their own challenges to other crews. Because then on a day like the cancellation of Weehaw, you could get people that could say, well, I can still have a little bit of racing here. I can still enjoy myself in a way that doesn't require me to wait for the next big set piece event to take place. And I think that would keep people in the sport and give people a great deal of enjoyment. So the passporting system is one of those ideas, but there are many more.
Certainly the flexibility is something that my own club actively does. We have a huge Masters membership, and we then just have a calendar. And if Mark signs up on a Tuesday morning and Rebecca signs up on a Wednesday afternoon, if Mark says, I'd like to row with Richard because we've arranged that we'd like to row together, and someone then allocates you a boat. And if you don't know who you want to row with, then the person in charge knows whether you're competent in a single and can be sent in a single, or whether maybe you're a beginner and you should be in a quad, and they pull the crews together. And so people slightly self-organized, but also we have a club day on Saturday, which they call a jamming session, you know, like a band jams, where no one can request to row with anyone unless it's just before a big event. And we deliberately mix everybody up so that composite crews of different competencies and different sexes go out. And it's been very, very successful and has broken through some of the more traditional rowing attitudes that, you know, we're a four and we've rowed together for many years and we enjoy rowing together for many years, but it does then isolate those individuals from the rest of the community of the club membership.
Exactly. And the trouble is that it means that you just keep the members that you've got. And that I think is, you know, one of the problems we've got is that things become too easily ingrained. So the earlier point that was asked about our point system, PRI system, actually the PRI system could be very effective in allowing people to throw crews together effectively without having any previous knowledge of the people who have come along and asked. And I've set up an entire boat club on this basis. I founded Crabtree Boat Club in 1996, precisely on the basis that when I came down from Cambridge, all my friends gave up rowing. Every single one of them, I think pretty well, gave up rowing because we had all been involved in the boat race program. We'd all been training extremely hard. We all had a massive change in lifestyle, obviously, as we came down from university. And nearly everybody said, I don't have the time to commit anymore to train and therefore compete at the level that I've always been competing at. And I said, look, guys, this is ridiculous. We could throw eight of you in a boat together on a Sunday morning at 10 o'clock and you would be able to go out for a great paddle and it would work if only we had a boat and an opportunity to do it. So I borrowed a boat, I borrowed a rack, I hired a rack, I rented a rack in Thames Rowing Club. And that is how we started. And subsequently, we found ourselves a boathouse. And as a result, we now have a very effective master's program that's being run out of Crabtree. So, you know, I think these things can happen. You just have to find the people that it resonates with, because as I mentioned, unfortunately, you will always get the people who want to dismiss it. But within a large enough audience, there are always going to be people who say, yeah, I would love to do that. And when I mentioned the idea of, you know, ladder system of racing to one person who should probably remain nameless, she was sitting in a room in an office and she turned around to the three other ladies who were in the room and said, the four of us could go out in a quad. And, you know, they'd already decided when they were going to be doing stuff and who they wanted to race against. There are lots of people out there who want this kind of stuff, in my view, and I'd love to see us rolling it all out.
On that note, Mark, thank you very much for your time, for your amazing energy and your vision for the future of British rowing and for sharing it with us, because I know we have listeners who have made comments, who've been watching us live from all around the world, and others will listen and learn too. Tell everyone how they can get hold of you if they want to follow you online.
Well, they can follow me on Twitter at Mark X Davies, D-A-V-I-E-S. If they want to get hold of me, they can always send me an email at mark.davis@britishrowing.org. That's it, really. I mean, either of those two things I respond to reasonably quickly, unless you send me a load of abuse on Twitter, in which case I'll probably ignore you or do my best to. But no, I mean, if you've got a point to make, then please, by all means, drop me an email. And thank you, Rebecca, very much for giving me the chance to come and chat. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Now, Rowing Chat is part of the Rowing Chat network. You can get email notifications of all of our new shows by joining our mailing list at www.rowing.chat. And you can listen to other shows in the network. We've recently launched the Irish Rowing podcast and also the a rowing nutrition podcast called Full Stroke Nutrition. And we have a couple of others in the wings, one particularly for coxing. If you would like to host a podcast, there's no obligation to do it every single week of the year, but we are very keen to get more diverse voices talking about the bits of rowing that they're interested in. So do get in touch with us through the website. I'm Rebecca Caro. You can catch this on all of your favorite podcast outlets, SoundCloud, Google Play, Spotify, iTunes. Please tell your friends, leave us a review. We value feedback. And till next time, goodbye.